Hello, everyone. I am James Dean Mixes from the Mixing Music Podcast, member exclusive episodes, where every week DK and I break down the technical side of mixing, mastering, and music production. With the normal weekly episodes, you get to hear DK and Lou talk about the more philosophical side of the music industry. On the member exclusive episodes, DK and I get more into the nitty-gritty technical side of things. We sometimes do mix breakdowns, we break down technical tips, and sometimes we share things that couldn't be shared on the normal public episodes. And we release two of these episodes every week. So for $3.99 a month, you get quite the bang for your buck. So go check out the mixingmusicpodcast.com or click on the link in the description to subscribe now. So without further ado, here's an episode from the vault. My friends, and welcome back to another exclusive subscriber-only episode of the Mixing Music Podcast. I am your host again, back in the seat, two episodes in a row, Braden from Flint Mastering, and joining me in one camera is a man who loves to donate anonymously, and joining me in another camera is a man who doesn't donate at all because he hates charity, Daddy DK and James Dean.
I don't believe in charity.
I think if like those orphans had a better work ethic, they'd be in a better situation. But that's just me.
That's so mean. Well, I only donate for the tax breaks.
Hey, in the words of Daniel Tosh, you know what's better than donating to charity for tax breaks?
What's that?
Keeping your money.
Dude, have you heard his new podcast?
I have. It's very good.
It's funny.
Dude, he's really so good.
And he's like interviewing what you would think to be the most boring people ever, but he makes it so funny.
Yeah, it's like our podcast.
I need to, what?
Yeah, we're as funny as Daniel Tosh, right?
Yeah.
I have to interview you and DK, the two most boring people ever.
That's true.
Fuck, dude.
But DK, his first episode is he's interviewing his wife's gynecologist. But like,
he's
funny, but like they're actually like really good questions that he asked that are like very informative too.
Like what?
Like his first question on every episode is, "Do you believe in ghosts?"
Oh yeah, he would ask that. Or like he asked like because the dude is like, he's a gynecologist in a very rich part. And he's like, he asked a question like, how do you get to like be a gynecologist in a rich part? And the guy like explains, oh, it's this whole, you like, everyone submits these things and you get like a paper that says where you're going or something like that. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that's how it works. But like, yeah, he just asked a question. Yeah. And like the ghost one's interesting too.
Dude.
No, it's a good podcast.
But he's funny.
It's just called Tosh Show for anyone who hasn't seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually saw clips of it, but I didn't. I haven't clicked on anything.
I was happy to see that he's doing this stuff again.
Well, let's get into today's episode. Who wants to introduce it?
Yeah, who is? We didn't talk about this beforehand. Who's going to set it up?
Braden, we'll have you introduce it.
Okay, I'll set it up. All right, so today's clip that I'm setting up was chosen by James, but it comes from the legendary mix engineer himself, Bob Horn, in an interview he did on the Sonic Scoop. No, that's not the podcast.
Secret Sonics.
A clip from the Secret Sonics podcast where Bob Horn is talking about getting the kick and the bass to sit well together. As you all know, we love Bob on this show. He is a great mentor, a great friend, and he always has lots of really great advice and things to say about mixing. So without further ado, here we go. Bob Horn talking about the low end. Roll the tape.
I've had instances where kick and bass are perfectly lined up on the grid and they hit every downbeat at the same time. And that's not the way it needs to be for the best low end. And you shift the whole bass, you know, to the right 20 milliseconds, all of a sudden it just gels better. You know, sometimes you grab auto align and throw that plugin on and it just gels better. You know, sometimes auto aligning the bass with a Rhodes all of a sudden way better. Sometimes just flipping the polarity on the Rhodes helps the bass, you know. On some live basses, I've even snuck and played live bass parts over because the sound was so horrible that I would play it over and then match the waveform so that the feel was the same guy's feel. Those intricate edit things can go so much farther than EQ and compression and just trying to fix it.
Alrighty, DK and James. So we got to hear from Bob, his his thought process about mixing kick and bass together, which he had a lot of really cool things to say about it. The first thing in particular was if the kick and the bass are lined up perfectly, then they like sound a little weird together. So he shifts the bass off to the side. Sometimes he re-records the bass himself, all kinds of really cool stuff that he does to get the low end sounding great. So let's start with James. Why did you pick this clip? Give us your thoughts on it. And then we'll move on to Daddy D.
I think he just throws out a bunch of things I never thought of doing. Just like you said, like if they're perfectly lined up, that doesn't sound good. So just very slightly shifting one of the tracks a little bit. That's something I'm going to try. Or putting a phase align, like I think you said on the bass and like one of the synth tracks or something like that helps it out. I'm realizing, because we mentioned before, his low end is amazing. And I actually have it on I have a bunch of his mixes on my low end playlist that I use to just kind of train my ears on my speakers. And he does more things that I want to try out and mess with, like just very slightly shifting a track to see if it makes something sound better. So I'm going to try that and the phase alignment plugin thing that he said to like put it on to like try to line up like, you know, the bass with a synth or something else that has a lot of low end that may not be considered conventionally a low end instrument. That's kind of why I chose. That's why it stood out to me. I just thought he gives a lot of really good ideas. And also it is interesting. I've heard, I know it happens in like people who do like punk rock or metal mixes that the mix engineer will sometimes be like, this recording sounds like shit. And so they'll like re-record and then do like an EQ match, to get it to go along with the rest of the things, like how that he plays the bass again, cause he can make it sound better. But yeah, I just thought it was a very interesting clip. A lot of good things to take away from it.
Indeed. Yeah. DK, your turn.
Yeah, so a couple
awkward
things.
Silence. Yeah,
there was just
each other.
Dead air. All right, but I do think, did you cough up water? Hell yeah. Hell yeah. All right.
DK played a sound bit when I was drinking water. I did not expect it.
James, next time when you're choking to death, if you could not do it into the microphone, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. I won't next time. I've choked twice in my life where I've had to get the Heimlich.
Wow.
And it sucked.
Holy shit, dude. That's not good. You suck at eating.
No, it's... Oh, never mind. It's...
No, you possibly
don't... I
don't
have a gag reflex. So I could like do like, you know, like a version of like sword swallowing in a sense. And so I did it with a popsicle and it broke. Like I pulled it up, I could hear a snap, and I pulled up and it was like those huge rocket pops and only half of it was still on the stick. And then I realized I'm not breathing right now. And so I looked around, my friends were, yeah. And I can't breathe. And I looked around and my friends were laughing because they thought I was like doing some bit. Except for one of my friends, Cooper, and he realizes. So he started giving me the Heimlich, and like, luckily he's like a very big guy. And so he was able to like toss me around and like it came out. But yeah,
that's
not
crazy.
Fun.
That's wow. Crazy.
I won't do that into the mic.
Let's get into this again. But I've been live streaming my mixing process recently. You know who DM'd me is Busy Work Beats. Busy Works. DM me and he's like, I've been watching your mixing live streams. And he's like, they're actually really awesome. I just want to let you know. Which is really awesome.
Aw,
nice.
Because he's like a big, I don't know if anybody knows, but he's like a big YouTuber, especially like in the FL producing scene. Like I think he's got like over 1 million subscribers. And the fact that we're friends and he said that nice thing, it really made my day today. Anyway, during the live stream, one of the things that I did on the live stream is an assortment of kicks and a couple basses. And for like the first 10 to 20 minutes of the live stream, what I did was I was just adjusting the phase. That's all I did. And when that happened, when I adjusted the phase, and I think the plugin that I use, which is In Phase by Waves. When I use that, I think it mostly just adjusts timing. So there's like a couple things you could do. You could do like a high pass filter, which will change the phase a little bit to see, and it'll show you how much the phase is correlated, like if it's a positive correlation, negative correlation. And so you're trying to do like, whether it's an EQ thing, some sort of bell curve or a high pass filter, or just changing the timing of it. You're trying to get the kicks to line up just right and the bass to line up just right or whatever. Taking that 10 minutes, 10 to 20 minutes, lining them up pretty meticulously, and it was quite annoying to do. It literally went from the bass. It sounded good. Like in solo, the kick drum sounded good, but it went from the kick was not punching through the bass. And then I did no EQing, no nothing. I just like time aligned them. Then all of a sudden the kick was punching through the bass. Through the speakers. Like it was literally just phase. And that's something that when you mess with the timing, when you do edits, I think it's like really important. Like he didn't really talk about phase. He was talking about timing. I think there's a lot to do about music. Like he's talking about the like shifting bass and kick to make it more musical. So it's like a little bit slower. I think like you want the bass to be a little bit late typically, you know, he's also talking about it sonically as well as musically. That's a musician to think about as well. But usually doing something like that can change it, but it can also just make sure that they don't clash phase-wise as well, because they're both low frequency instruments. The second thing that he said was, which was really interesting, is like sometimes sometimes I pulled out the bass and replayed the bass because the original producer just sucked at playing bass. I was like, that's funny. Honestly, that sounds like I don't know about anybody else, but if I was paying somebody else to mix, I want to have a good enough relationship with them where I gave them the room to tell me that stuff or allow them to change that stuff. I mean, I understand if I was a bass player in a band, I found out that my bass part was like replaced by the engineer. Like I'd be a little bit sad, but I think that it's at the end of the day, like this is a kind of completely unrelated, but this triggered this thought. It's like, I don't think you're not making records for you. I know that even in, what's that new book? Who's the guy, the producer that Rick Rubin. In Rick Rubin's book and in his interviews, he's like, you never make music for yourself. You don't, or you said, he says something along the lines of like, you never make it for the audience. And in a few interviews, he said like, you don't make it for the audience. You make it for God, which whether or not you were religious or not, it's like the concept of you make it not for yourself, not for your audience. You make it to do the best for this song, like the best for the universe, you know, whatever it is, whether you believe in God and you're making it for God or whether you make it for the universe. I think it's like the concept is still the same, like do it for a higher purpose. And anyway, that's just completely unrelated. That's something I was thinking about. Like, I do think that sometimes like egos get involved and like the fact that Bob is willing to do that and the client let him do that. I think that if that changed the vibe of the song, I think that that is so awesome. And that's typically very difficult to do from an ego perspective in a professional world. So I think it's like props to the producer that allowed him to do that, the artist that allowed him to do that, and props to him for being able to do that because Bob is actually a pretty good musician.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. And in a way, it's selfless for him to do that because like he's not going to get credited for playing the bass.
Or maybe he did. You know, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, awesome. Braden, what were your thoughts on this?
I don't really have many because I don't do a lot with this. at least in mastering. But I will say the one time I know that this stuff like works and that it makes things sound better because when I was in college, I remember I was like playing a guitar part. We had to, for one of our classes, we had to recreate a song. So I decided to recreate Misery Business by Paramore. And so I was like double tracking guitars and I had no idea what I was doing. So I would play the guitar part and then I copied it and then just pasted it and then sent it left and right. And I was like, man, like, why do my guitars sound so like weak and thin, like compared to the actual song? Because in my mind, I was like that band only has like one guitar player, I'm pretty sure. So why does I have two guitar parts? Why does it sound so much worse? So then I asked my teacher about it and he was like, oh yeah, like don't line them up perfectly. He was like, do two separate takes and then shift them like apart from each other just a tiny bit and it will sound way bigger. And sure enough, it did. So I think I recorded the guitar part like four different times. So I played it a little bit different each time and then all offset it from each other and then panned it to different parts left and right. And then I was like, oh, that's how they do it. That's how their guitar sound sounds so big. So I haven't done specifically this thing that Bob Horn is talking about, but I do know that when you can get either the sometimes getting the phase to line up perfectly or getting it to be just a little bit off from each other does significantly improve the sound of, you know, certain elements in your mix. So I 100% stand by what Bob has to say, and I think everyone else should take his advice and do what he says. But not blindly. Make sure it works for you. Don't just do it because he says it. We talk about that all the time. Try it because he says it. And then if you like it, then keep doing it.
Yeah. And with the things, it's not, to kind of goes out, it's like not necessarily something you per se can pick out, like a specific thing you hear. It's just kind of like what Brandon was saying. Like it just sounds bigger and better when you get it right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you guys for your thoughts. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Feel free to visit our mixingmusicpodcast.com/sponsors to get some goodies. And without further ado, DK, sign us off.
Yeah. No advice this week. I think the advice is the only people who... No, I actually had some really practical advice. I forgot what it was. Maybe something in the lines of, like, if your guitar tone sucks... if you record a guitar and your guitar tone sucks, that's because you didn't color it red. You need to change the track color to red for guitars. And if you don't do that, your guitars will never come out right. And that's just a matter of fact. Okay, it's been double blind tested. All right. I mean, it's just something about every DAW. It's got to be red. And drums have to be green. On that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. Yo, what up? It's DK. Thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. I just want to do a quick plug about Antares and Auto-Tune. Antares makes the original industry standard Auto-Tune that we all know and love the sound of. We are sponsored by them, so if you visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/Auto-Tune, we do get a small kickback from every purchase. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Please enjoy this episode.